So my big son, the bigger of my sons, my large son, Henry is his name. He's 4 and a half, which means that he's YouTube's son now. Now he, like most children that are alive these days, he belongs to YouTube.
And that never stops. Once you crack that can.
That's it. I know. I'm a 34-year-old man. I belong in part to YouTube, but it's nothing like my son, who was stolen away like the Goblin King through a window. YouTube came and entranced him with a bubble and took him away. And on one of his sojourns into that accursed platform, he started to watch some Cuphead Let's Play.
Oh.
Like, fortunately, a commentary-free one, because I would be way too nervous to allow the sweet nothings of a real gamer into his...
Fuck that Rocket asshole. Ears.
Yeah, exactly. So he was watching a Cuphead playthrough, and he got really into Cuphead, like the character, and he wants to like play like Cuphead. I played the game in front of him, and I don't perform at the level that he needs me to perform at in Cuphead. But he does like to play. He plays pretend like constantly, and he wants to play pretend Cuphead and Mugman.
Sure.
So Cuphead and Mugman will go around, and you know they use your finger gun, your thumb and your forefinger, right? And that's, and we'll have to curtail that before it's going back to daycare, because that's going to be frowned upon. But so there's one problem with his Cuphead fascination.
Okay.
And that is the way he describes Cuphead and Mugman's means of attack. I'm going to try and play a clip I recorded on my phone yesterday. I'll try and play that now.
So what do you call it when Mugman and Cuphead fight the bad guys? What do they use?
Finger blasters.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
He won't stop running around the house and yelling, "Let's finger blast that big dragon. A big teddy bear's coming. We got to finger blast him."
I mean, he's generous. What can you say?
You can't say, don't say that, because then he says, why? And I don't know what to say to the why. Because he's so little, guys. He's so little, and he shouldn't say finger blast. But he says it 100 times a day.
And really, the two words separate are fine.
Totally fine. If he says, let's blast them with their finger, no, that's still pretty bad.
I don't talk about my son very much on the podcast, but he discovered that you can put a Mickey Mouse appearance on my Apple Watch, but he calls my Apple Watch a clock, and he always asks if he can borrow it, except for he has trouble pronouncing L's. So it's been a very brutal time around Nona and Pa,
who are
deeply confused, and it was.
I can't wait for these.
Day.
Can't wait for these two kids to hang out again in front of your Nona and Pa, just talking about finger blasting and borrowing cocks.
Uh-oh.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
I don't like this.
I don't either.
I don't like what's going on here, because quite honestly, I built a brand, and it's a very strong brand, and it might only be one sentence, but it is my sentence. And I listened to the beginning of last week's episode too, and y'all did the same thing, and I don't like it.
No. Last weekend, I was like, my name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
He was doing like a happy birthday, Bob Dylan. Oh, sure. 80th birthday, congrats.
Well, I don't, all the passion is gone now. I don't even know if I can say,
just say your name.
My name is Russ Rushley, and I'm the best game of the week.
See, no one can do it. Nobody does it better. This is Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in... Wait, it's a video game book club.
No. And lots of references for people over the age of 50.
Yeah. Who here likes Wings?
I don't... We're not bringing back the books. I'm sorry.
Okay. A recent Twitter poll has sort of... Okay. Yeah, no. The customer is always wrong. Justin is away this week, but the three of us are going to be talking about sort of a strange entry into the Besties canon, which is the Nintendo Switch re-release of the Nintendo 3DS Mii-based RPG, Miitopia, which is they just did... Damn, put it right back on this Nintendo platform and charged a full $50 for it. And
look,
why not?
Look, here's the deal. When we look at May, we think about major game releases. You know, Rockstar would always put out their big releases in May. It's like a tentpole month. There are people trying to get the biggest releases out before summer and the doldrums. And here, perfect example, we have the Switch re-release of a 3DS exclusive Miitopia.
We're gonna talk about a few different things this episode, but we're going to focus on Miitopia. Before we launch into it, Chris, do you want to set up what Miitopia was and now is?
I mean, I think you nailed it. It's a very simple and straightforward role-playing game, kind of in the guise almost of like Costume Quest in its turn-based simplicity. The real fun
even
of it...
Even simpler. I would say it's more early Dragon Quest
the inspired, appeal
sure.
of the game is that you can make Miis look like your friends, in theory, or you can steal all of the Miis from Griffin's Switch somehow the entire game star the Pringles man, a big baby, and my villain, who is Hank Hill.
Yeah, Hank Hill is my wise sage who provides guidance.
Satoru Iwata is my wise sage, which I think. One other thing about it. I think, in Fresh, you can confirm this for me just with a strong yes or no. It's inspired by that free game that came with the Nintendo 3DS. Yes.
Oh, find me, I believe, is what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think it is sort of that is sort of its origin story was Find Me.
So that's
it.
We did it.
We have a lot to discuss. I feel like we're going to do a deep dive into 3DS history on today's episode.
We are.
So, Miitopia on the 3DS, there were a lot. If you never picked up a 3DS, first of all, do that. Go buy a Nintendo 3DS because it's probably my favorite video game, like handheld, ever. Like the 3DS library is so stacked.
Yeah, the library is
so
good.
Unique.
I don't think the actual hardware was that great, in my personal
opinion. You're talking to a person who owned every iteration of the 3DS hardware because I like video game hardware, as you guys know. And that sort of peaked with the 3DS. My favorite was the new Nintendo 3DS, not the XL, but the one that you could customize the faceplates on.
Yeah.
Ooh, boy, howdy, I really got into that. But there were a lot of games that used Miis, which exist on the Switch mostly as like a profile picture. Like you can make a Mii that represents sort of you, that you use a profile picture for, like, you know, your friends to see, or when you launch a game, you know, you select whatever user. But it is not integrated or essential to the hardware in the way that it was for Wii and Wii U and 3DS. And so with the 3DS, there was the Street Pass Plaza, where like you could walk by other people with 3DSs and their Miis would travel to your 3DS and you could like play little games with them. Find Me was one of those, which was just a very simple turn-based RPG that Miitopia is an evolution of.
And yet, like, that game really, like, totally grasped me because I would go to things like E3 and, you know, all the fucking dorks at E3 would have their 3DS on in, like, passive mode, and I'd get back to the media room and, like, my 3DS would just get filled and filled with all these like random people, that some of which I knew, some of which I didn't. Reggie, I think, showed up like 16 times over the course of 3 days.
I had mine running pretty much around the clock when I went to TGS, the Tokyo Game Show, and it wasn't just limited to the Tokyo Game Show at that point. Like I would turn on my 3DS, and you could only get a max of 10 Miis at a time in your system before you had to like check them in and then get 10 more. Literally, like I would be on a train and I would like get the notification that I had filled up my Mii Plaza, and I would say hi to all of them, and I would close it, put it back in my pocket, and like 5 minutes later, I would have 10 more. Like it was nonstop. Anyway, all of that is to say that Miis were integrated into all these different games. The Mii Plaza had, I think, at the end of its like life cycle, like over a dozen different games that you could play. Like there was a shmup and a bunch of different ones. And so Miitopia is one of a couple games that were standalone, including Tomodachi Life, which is like sort of a really wild, very comedy-centric pseudo-life sim. Really, it was just sort of a weird, fun game that you cast Miis in. That one has not made the jump to Switch yet, but Miitopia has. And I think the first thing that like... is I have actually been enjoying Miitopia.
I've been
playing it with my son, who which is great because it gets him away from the disgusting influence of Cuphead. But also, like, you know, I made me and him and Rachel, and our baby is our mage in our party. And like, it tickles him to no end, like watching us, you know, run through a kingdom and battle a bunch of bad guys. And then we get to an inn and he's like, give me the money so I can get some armor. Like he's really into it.
Sure.
Because little kids are very narcissistic. But it's so strange. It's such a strange choice to bring this game or any sort of me-based thing onto the Switch, which does not have the integrated like me technology,
yeah, the back end.
Integrated like me. Because when you turn on Miitopia for the first time, your Street Pass Plaza might have fucking like 1,100 Miis to like choose from the jump. And when I turned Miitopia on, it was just my profile picture, Griffin, and nothing else.
Right, but you can pull from like the creations that other people have made.
Sometimes.
So yeah, well, you can do that when you cast individual Miis, and it's not like an online service.
Right.
What it is a list of popular Miis from the 3DS version that Nintendo just like lifted from the 3DS version and put in the Wii version. These are not, that Hank Hill that me and Chris Plant chose was a Hank Hill that somebody made in the 3DS version that just got put wholesale into the Switch version.
Yeah, I thought you could also connect online. Maybe I was misreading it.
You can. You need like access codes or if it's a friends.
There are certain friends that showed up in mine. Like I saw Griffin and two other people, and for certain characters, you can only either create your own or pull from friends. And then there are other characters where you can use this, like the greatest
popular
hits.
Is what it's called.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I was lucky in that Griffin had already stacked his roster with so many of the greatest hits that
right.
I kind of could choose from it either way. He didn't have Hatsune Miku,
no,
who I did have to pick separately at a later point in the game.
I mean, you could just create your own.
You can, and it is more. No. It's more robust this time because you know the Mii creator is essentially unchanged from the 3DS version.
It's more involved.
It is the same, but what they have added is wigs, highly customizable wigs.
I think they added there's like facial details as well. Like
yes, there's also a makeup face paint sort of feature that you can do now. But I started out like going on my like surfing the web. Like, is there any way to bring all these Miis that I have on the 3DS over to the Switch? And there is, and it's so archaic and weird. Like, you have to get an amiibo, which I happen to have a few of.
What a shock.
And you can like register a Mii on your 3DS as the owner of that amiibo, and then you can use the amiibo to like bring them into your Switch ecosystem. So I did that with a few of my Miis, but all of this is to say, like, it's not like turnkey like it was on the 3DS, because Miis are not important on the Switch like at all. So it's just like a strange choice at all.
I wonder if this is the beginning of like them introducing more of that to Switch. Maybe like that's the rationale for bringing such a weird game over. Something you said earlier that didn't really click with me until relatively recently, and it wasn't with this game, it was with Pokemon Snap. as some people may know, I play like 95% of my time on Switch is in handheld mode. I very, very rarely play on TV. And a lot of times that works for me because like I'd rather just play when I have free time and it's fine. I don't take over the TV. But for games like this and for Pokemon Snap, these games are really made with an audience in mind, even if they are single player games. Pokemon Snap, like my wife and I play on the couch and we'll like scream at each other when like Chimchar runs across the street. And you do not get that from the handheld experience at all. And I think that's the total same thing with Miitopia, where you get this like hilarious, like, oh, there's my aunt or whatever running across, casting a spell or dropping shit into a frying pan that you don't get if you're playing handheld and solo. Like, I don't know that this game as like a, I'm going to like grind out this game work. Like, is that engaging? But as a, like an entertainment product that you just like throw up on the screen for like a kid or like, you know, a family member that doesn't play a ton of games.
Yeah.
It's kind of great.
I mean, should we talk about the actual, like the actual gameplay is very Dragon Quest-y.
Yeah, it's
like
very
simple. You create your character, you go through, essentially the levels are like these linear paths that you can branch off from time to time. And as you run, you know, your characters will, you know, say stuff to each other and there will be like occasional random events like, oh, I found some buried treasure. Here's a treasure chest. Or, hey, this bush is rustling. Do you want to take a look inside of it? Like all these different things. But then there are also random battles, which you can only control your main character on when you're in there. The other three party members that you can get do their own thing. And they do that thing based on their class and their personality. So there's different quirks with your personality. If you pick a character who is airheaded, like sometimes they'll forget what they were doing and do something else instead. If you have a character who is cautious, sometimes they'll wait until the very end of the turn to do their attack and it'll be a little bit more powerful.
Yeah.
I like that idea of like an ant farm style RPG. I've actually turned my main character to auto mode also. So now it's just like whatever gear you have and whatever your relationships are with each other and whatever your personality is, you're going to do what you're going to do in battle. And then you, the player, can interact with it with different sort of kind of interesting systems. There's one called a safe spot. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a battle and one of your characters gets this negative effect, which isn't like poison in this game because it's silly, it's like they're crying or they're laughing hysterically, you can pick them up and put them in a safe spot so they can't be attacked and they'll recover faster, but they can't act, which is kind of an interesting thing. But you also have sprinkles that you can pour on your characters to like recover a little bit of hit points or a little bit of MP or bring them back to life once, and so you have to use those very sparingly. I don't know, it is not deep at all, but it's just enough for me to like stay engaged and stay interested in it, and like want to chase the progression stuff that exists in the game, as limited as it is.
Plant, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it feels like a high-res port of a TI-83 game, you know? Like,
I played Street Fighter 2 on my TI-83, for the record, so.
What?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's not a lot of game in the game. On top of this extremely simplistic combat system, there is the in-between stuff where you, like, go to a village, but there's not really much to do. Or you go to an inn and you have the option to buy gear, but it's randomized and it's whatever the characters are interested in. At least that's where it's at with me right now. Maybe that changes.
It gets a bit
more complicated.
It gets a bit more than that. Yeah.
You can like go on outings with them, or you can play like rock, paper, scissors with them. But again, everything is so simple. It has that just like very, I don't know a better way of describing it than a calculator game. That said, I was like not into the game part of it, but the like meme part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Starts ironic and then quickly becomes not ironic. We're like my group is me and then Sonic the Hedgehog, who is my energetic thief, Hatsune Miku, and we are inspired by Iwata, we are fighting Hank Hill. And my character is slowly falling in love with Sonic the Hedgehog. And the game is pretty clear. They are in love.
Sure.
Yeah.
They sleep in the same room together. They love to go to the beach together. They are slowly becoming a romantic pair. It's wonderful. I find it so charming and hilarious.
Man, if you like that, I don't know if you ever played Tomodachi Life, but Tomodachi Life is that times 1,000 without all the RPG shit. Like, it is just so strange, that game. And it is my preferred title, I would say, of these two, and the one that I wish had come over. Although that one is so dependent on you having a bunch of memes that look like your buddies and
didn't a version
people.
Of that come to iOS? Kind
Tomodachi?
Of like it.
Oh. Wait, yes, you're right. There was like a social.
It was like the first Nintendo mobile game. Yeah.
Yeah, it had a brief moment. It was like Nintendo's first iOS game, and for a moment we're all
because
like,
it had like a funny text to speech thing that like I remember that like playing with like all the Polygon people playing. When really it was just like you would go to their house and they would be like, you know, they would just say meme shit, robot voices.
Yeah, it's too bad this the game we're talking about this week is like full price.
Yeah, I don't usually like being a part of that conversation, but $50 for a re-release of what is already like a pretty bare bones.
Yeah,
like
and it doesn't even work as well with like the best features because the game really it is best when you are invested in these characters, whether they are your friends or like that is the gimmick of the game. Right. And yeah, it's a shame because as a Nintendo game, I doubt it will ever come down in price. But as much as it's like doesn't really click with me gameplay wise, I say that. And then each day I pick it up and I put like another 15 minutes into it because it's like, well, this is kind of funny. And then I get bored of it pretty quickly and then I turn it off. And then the next day I do the same thing. So
I would also ask this question for parents on the call. Don't you think that this might be like the only RPG you could give like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old? And
absolutely. Yeah.
Like I can't think of another one.
Costume Quest is the one that I would do before.
Sure. But I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I've never played Costume Quest, so I shouldn't comment on it. But like
that one's a little
Miitopia,
more.
You don't need to be able to read. Like I read the stuff to Henry that they say in Miitopia, and it's like very, it's not extended like discussions. It's like a quip and then a quip in response to the quip, and like that's it. And so that's very it's very digestible. Henry's been really enjoying it. That has been sort. He has asked to play. The adventure game, which is what he calls it, and you know, I'm always a huge fan of that. And there's a place for this game. Like it's such a unique thing, and I think that there could have been if it had not been a re-release. Like if they'd done something more with it, and if they had had a better system for like accessing a live online database of Miis. I'll attach this addendum. I'm pretty sure that I'm right in saying that it's just stuff from the 3DS that they pulled over and not a live database. I'm pretty sure that's what it said. So forgive me if I'm like wicked wrong for some reason, but I don't know. They could have done a lot more. Like if you're gonna put this game back out on a new platform, like put in a little bit more work into it. If you're gonna charge as much as you're charging for it, I don't know. It is enjoyable enough, but I feel like it could have been something like kind of special and great if it had been just a little more robust.
Yeah, and I on top of the don't talk about whether it's worth the money thing, I'm going to do another thing that I don't usually like to do, but I really wish it was a Musou game or something else. Like
there was a Musou game in the Mii Pass Plaza, I think. There was something.
You should tell the people what that means.
Like Strikers is like the most recent one of these. Dynasty Warriors, like games where you just...
So just like killing 1,000 guys in a crowd, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And like anything that plays with this idea of taking, you know, lots of me faces and characters from across the internet or just lets you like feel like you are inside the game. I think like for me, that's the appeal of this gimmick is like, it's you, or it's your friends, or it's these characters, and you're there. And I don't know. On one hand, I guess a role-playing game makes a lot of sense, because role-playing games are about, like, taking over the identity. But the game is so hands-off that I never got that, like, that high that I wanted from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I wish I could. I wish I could recommend this game to people, but I don't know that it's really a good $50 purchase. And like you said, it's a heartbreaker that, like, I think Grezzo do this one? I think they did the original 3DS version. Grezzo did like a ton of really amazing 3DS games and ports and stuff. And I think they may have done this Switch version, but it's a Nintendo like product. And so the chances of it being discounted are pretty slim. But I mean, there's some I don't know,
Dogecoin millionaires out there. I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, if you're a if you're one of those
maybe not more
crypto whales, then maybe it's worth it. But it's fun, and it's if you have kids who like are at that age where they're starting to read a little bit and are interested in stuff like this. I've been enjoying my time with it, but I just wish it was more.
That is Miitopia. It's available on the Switch. We've said the price a few times if you're interested.
It's available on 3DS. If you don't have a 3DS, pick it up on 3DS. You could probably get it dirt cheap, I bet, on 3DS.
There you go.
And it's pretty much the same game.
Speaking of 3DS, we're going to take a quick break, but when we are back, we're going to talk about some 3DS games that we would like to see get the Miitopia treatment and appear on the Switch.
Okay, who wants to start? I think we were all pretty big in the 3DS scene, so I'm excited for this conversation.
I'll go first. Yeah, so, as I said at the top of the show, the 3DS as a piece of hardware is not my favorite, mostly just because I really, really hated the analog stick. I thought it was, just not fun to use. The games were great, as Griffin alluded to, but I do think that by bringing games over to the Switch, which is obviously a much, much better piece of hardware, and obviously you could have HD graphics and make it look all pretty while also having like a good controller, opens up a lot of potential. And one game that I absolutely adored on 3DS that would find a much better home on Switch is Metroid Samus Returns.
Interesting.
This is a game that came out pretty late in the 3DS's life cycle.
It was one of the swan songs.
It was like one of the last. And it's obviously a Metroid game. It's a remake of Metroid 2, which came out on the Game Boy originally. And rather than being like a straight remake, it's more like a Final Fantasy remake, which is to say like they fully redid the entire game, graphics, controls, how you progress, upgrades, all that stuff. So it's basically a whole new game with like the spirit of Metroid 2 intact. And it's really, honestly, one of my favorite Metroid games that's ever been released. Incredible like art design, this really interesting like melee combat system, a lock-on system that's like Metroid Prime-y. But one of the big downsides to it was that it was on the 3DS and it was hugely reliant on the analog stick for aiming. It had like 360 aiming and all sorts of like really complex controls. And it just felt like it didn't really work as well as it could have on that platform. Not to mention the fact that like the game is visually like super interesting. It is obviously inspired by Metroid, but takes a slightly more like anime or just like stylized like art style that would look absolutely fucking stunning on Switch with HD graphics. Like it would scale up so well. I just really love it. I do think that it sort of got a little bit forgotten because of how late in the 3DS's life cycle it came out, but it was really just tremendous. And I think it would find like a really good home on Switch.
That is a very good pick.
Thank you.
How about you, Griffin?
Yeah, I've got like five. The fact that there's not a Pilot Wings game on Switch is kind of heartbreaking. The Pilot Wings Resort was, I think, a launch game on 3DS.
Oh, yeah,
it's like the only good 3DS launch game. But I have a lot of fondness in my heart for that one. I would say, there was an eShop title called Attack of the Friday Monsters? Attack of the Friday Monsters, A Tokyo Tale, which I remember I got like assigned to review, and it was like one of my first reviews that I wrote for, I don't remember if it was Joystick or Polygon, but I was like, what is this game? This doesn't look like a real game, and it was so charming and delightful. It's like a weird kind of narrative adventure game, but also there's like a rock, paper, scissors style thing, and you're a little kid living in Tokyo and like you're obsessed with Ultraman style action TV shows, and then also kaiju show up in your town. It is very charming and great. That one was published by Level 5, who's one of my favorite like video game companies, full stop. They did the Layton games and Dark Cloud 1 and 2, which are like some of my favorite video games ever made. They also had a title on 3DS that I think is worth reviving called Fantasy Life, which is such a weird game that it's one of the few games I can think of that I am so nostalgic for that I did not think was a very good game when it came out. It was essentially kind of a life sim style game in the vein of Harvest Moon, or more specifically Rune Factory, which is like the fantasy action RPG Harvest Moon, where you could take on these different professions. Some were more action oriented, like, you know, you could be a wizard or a fighter or an archer or like all these different things. Or you could be like a tailor and like make clothes, or you can be a miner. And like each of these jobs has like a whole storyline attached to it. And like all of these different systems are very interconnected. And it's one of those things where it's like a mile wide and an inch deep, where like it's, you know, there's so many different systems and all these different things to do and explore, but none of them are particularly like engaging or rich. But like it was such a neat game that I think about a lot. And I think would be exciting to have on the Switch. But my number one, the one that I like think about all the time and I want so bad, was the best Game Freak game, the best game that Game Freak has made in a long time, and it's not Pokemon.
Wow.
It's Pocket Card Jockey.
Yeah.
Y'all know about Pocket Card Jockey?
Tell the people.
Oh, did I take? Oh, you were gonna do Pocket Card
Jockey.
It's
okay. I have other feelings, but you should tell people about it.
Pocket Card Jockey is the world's premier horse racing and also solitaire game. It is. You play a horse breeder slash jockey who has a stable and a fledgling sort of horse racing business, where you get a horse. And then you race them by playing solitaire. And it's basic solitaire rules. You have, you know, cards, and you have to put them on ascending or descending order of opposite color cards, right? It's solitaire. Yeah. You all know what solitaire is. And you get, you know, your speed and your performance in the race is determined by, like, how much of the pile you can clear before, you know, you run out of opportunities in the solitaire fashion. And then if you win races, you get more money that you can spend on, you know, upgrading your horse with different, like, better food or training regimens. And then eventually they get old and you have to retire them and you breed them to make a new horse. And the cycle begins again. And it was so, like, I spent so much time playing Pocket Card Jockey. And I thought, like, this is the beginning of something big. There's going to be this, but it wasn't. It was just the one title on 3DS eShop, and I think about it all the time. It's just a good-ass game, and sometimes I will pick my 3DS back up just to play Pocket Card Jockey. It is that good. So, like, I'm amazed it hasn't come to iOS. Like, that is bonkers to me. But having, like, a little horse-raising business that then you played solitaire with was just a perfect little combination, and is the game that I think about a whole bunch. And Tomodachi Life would be fun to get back on Switch.
Yeah,
that was five.
My answer is nothing. I mean, other than Pocket Card Jockey, I don't think we actually need 3DS games to come to Switch, because pretty much everything that came out on 3DS, we've gotten better versions of on
That's
Switch
not true.
Already.
No.
Chris has a point, because I was looking at a lot of the old 3DS titles, and a lot of them have already made the sort of Switch jump.
Yeah, Fire Emblem is better on Switch. It pains me to say this, because Mario Kart 7 is the second best Mario Kart game, but Mario Kart is better on Switch. Super Mario Maker is better on Switch. And then there's stuff that just got, like, straight up ported. Okay, there's actually one correct answer, and I'm kind of embarrassed for both of you that you didn't say it.
I'm waiting for it.
Zelda, Link Between Worlds.
Yes, that is what I was waiting for. I didn't want to say it, because I...
Yeah, no, don't worry. I got one right here. But I will say this about 3DS. I guess I'm the one who didn't love it as much, because I love the, like Justin, I'll speak on his behalf since he's not here, the run to the litter games, the really weird stuff that Nintendo puts by. And the run to the litter stuff on Switch isn't that great. On Switch, on 3DS is not that great. It is Project Steam, just didn't click. Detective Pikachu wasn't that good. Steel Diver? Wasn't that great. The fresh swings that they took on 3DS, bringing back Kid Icarus. There was a lot.
I liked the Kid Icarus game. Yeah. The weird on rails. Like,
I really
RPG
wanted to
thing.
Like it. That said, the entries in like the big name franchises are fantastic. I just think they're either already available on Switch or they're done better on Switch. Except for, obviously, like we said, maybe the best Zelda game, contrary to our own.
After our Zelda tournament that we did, I went back and replayed all of Link Between Worlds over the course of like a few days. That game absolutely kicks ass. Yeah. But it's also one of those things where like, it's fine on 3D. Like, it's fine on 3DS.
Yeah, another but you know, that, like, it will continue to get harder and harder for people to be able to play 3DS games over time.
Sure.
So
yeah.
One other game.
Yeah.
I did not play it. I wanted it on Switch just so I can finally play it. Zero Escape, Virtue's Last Reward.
I mean, it's everywhere. That game is, that whole series is on so many different platforms.
It's not on my Switch. I can't play it on the go.
I guess so. Well, that was what I was going to say, is like, there's a lot of games sort of like that that have found life on iOS also, right? Yeah. Like, so like a lot of the Ace Attorney games, a lot of the Phoenix Wright games are on iOS now. I think they're also on Switch at this point.
Yep.
Ghost Trick is like a really cool, like, was a really cool 3DS game that is now, I believe, on iOS. The Layton games are starting to come out on iOS, and that's, I've replayed them on iOS and they're fantastic. More level 5 joints. A lot. It's the 3DS is like a really stellar, like, handheld. And there's been Nintendo has had hardware that has not had the like library that stands up to the test of time. The DS was like, you know, obviously Nintendo's like huge smash hit, reversal of fortune sort of a piece of hardware. But going back, like, I would be hard pressed to think of a lot of Nintendo DS games that I would like kill to go back and play.
Yeah.
But the 3DS is just like so.
There are a lot of
DS. 3DS also had some very good hardcore games that like I just have not gotten into, though I want to try them, like the Shin Megami Tensei games and Eitrin Odyssey, which.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's stuff there. It just was not the stuff that I was always intimidated by it, to be honest. So maybe that's why it should be on Switch. Maybe I can finally play Eitrin Odyssey and have, like, a better map system, so I'm not totally lost when I try it.
Well, no, I mean, the 3DS was... Okay, I can't believe I'm going to bat for fucking Eitrin Odyssey in 2021.
That
there were certain games that worked better that I believe will never be more appropriate for a piece of hardware than the two-screened 3DS, because Eitrin Odyssey is all about drawing maps while exploring a world, which works a lot better when you have one dedicated screen for map drawing with it. Like, that game was designed for what the 3DS could do. So,
Wii U, baby.
The Wii U. The Wii U. Absolutely the Wii U.
That's a good list, though.
Do we have any emails about Miitopia?
We didn't do a call this week. We're gonna save listener questions and thoughts for next week, because next week we have a big topic. But I'll save that and just see. Are y'all playing anything else right now?
I'm still playing Resident Evil.
You haven't finished it yet.
No, I've finished the story. Oh. It was not a long game. That's fine. Yeah. I thought it was a perfect length. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but I talked about how like good the post-game features are, and they are great. The Mercenaries mode, which is a mode that's been in a bunch of Resident Evil games for a while, is like super fun and arcadey, and you just like run through the maps you're familiar with, but like keeping track of score and combos and picking up like perks and all sorts of gun upgrades and stuff like that. It's just like pretty amazing how much they sort of jammed in terms of post post finishing the game features. So yeah, it's still been my jam.
I mentioned Final Fantasy 14 last week, and they just put it on PlayStation 5, and you can get like a free upgrade to it if you own the game on PS4, which I do. So I put that on PS5 mostly because I just like hadn't played my PS5 in like since Demon's Souls. and it works really well on PS5 and it looks fantastic. But the big thing is that the PS5 remote play feature is a lot better than it was on PS4. Like a lot, we talked about that, I think, when we were talking about Demon's Souls and stuff, that I have that Backbone One, which I cannot evangelize for enough. And then I will just remote play Final Fantasy 14. And my our newborn is killing us, really putting us through the ringer, because he's sleeping in like 20 to 25 minute increments, which is abysmal, but it's also about the exact amount of time that you need to get through like a quest in Final Fantasy 14 or a boss fight in Final Fantasy 14. That game is I have played so much of that game, and there are still huge swaths of like really cool shit in that game that I haven't even touched, like, and stuff that I didn't even know was there. There's a whole at some point they added a whole Ivalice like world with like different raids and dungeons and boss fights and stuff in it. So that incorporates like Ivalice was like a connected world in a lot of different Final Fantasy games, but mostly Final Fantasy 12, which I love, and Final Fantasy Tactics. Mm-hmm. So like you can hang out with Ramza and like get their armor. So like there's gear just in the same way that there was a whole Nier Automata sort of branch where you can get gear from Nier Automata and like put that on your character. There's that for Final Fantasy 12 and Final Fantasy Tactics. And it's like, that's why, like, I didn't even know that that was in there. So like that game continues to surprise me. That game continues to like, I don't know. I feel like every time I play it, I'm just like an archaeologist just like digging up some update from 6 years ago that like adds something to the game that is just incredible. I just started to play Triple Triad, the card game from Final Fantasy 8 or 9. I forget which one introduced Triple Triad, but like there's a whole Triple Triad system that you play in the gold saucer, which has like all these different mini, like all this shit that I still haven't even touched and done yet, but it's kind of perfect for remote play, just like little tiny increments. So that's what I've been playing. And that's a good ass game, man.
Been playing a lot more Clap Hands Golf.
Yeah.
Obsessed with it. And I've got a character that looks like a bad cartoon of my boy Russ Rushtick. I dressed him up as a superhero now. The second I saw that costume pop up, I was like, I'm going to move heaven and earth to make sure that I can get that costume.
Wise.
Do you feel invested in like the character progression? I feel like if I could get invested in the character progression stuff, that game would have me like locked down.
Kinda. I mean, I just upgrade all of them equally. So I'm in like each day it gives you like the little bonuses if you like check in, makes it easier to upgrade them. I've definitely hit the point where like upgrading any further is gonna be slow. And that's about halfway through their upgrade pass. And I'm also at the point where like I don't just win everything anymore. And it's not because I'm not even doing well. It's that like
people the AI starting out.
It's gotten harder. But that said, it's been slow enough that I'm kind of sticking with it for now. But man, it just feels so good. The more I like it really rewards practice and like committing to it for a few minutes every day. I actually feel like I'm getting better at the game. Which is like something I haven't done with a sports game in a long time.
I would say this, and I'm very aware of this right on the heels of Mario Golf coming out next month. I do wish it had the 3-tap meter for aiming and hitting the ball.
We talked about that last week. It you get used to it. Like, yeah. I actually really like the touch-based like system that they have now. I find it a lot easier to like hook the ball in the way that I want to hook it when I'm using this new sort of interface.
Also, Fresh, I would try plugging in your Backbone, because I believe every game on Apple Arcade has to have controls.
Yeah, I did try it, actually, and it still uses that thing, but it uses the right analog stick instead of touch, which is not... It's touch is better than the right analog stick. Yeah. It's definitely worse. So I'd much rather... I don't know. Just like update it, dogs. It can't be that hard. Y'all already programmed that shit about 16 games ago.
Okay, next week.
Next week.
Do we want to talk about what we're doing?
Frushik, you want to tell
them? Yeah, I'll do it. So next week we are doing a Resident Evil bracket. We've done the bracket before. We are deciding the very best Resident Evil game. Which games will be included? The good ones. The main ones. Not Raccoon City, not
Resident Evil Gaiden on the Game Boy Color.
So we're going to be doing that. I think it's going to be really interesting just because of how different each Resident Evil game is from one another. Obviously a couple weeks ago talked about Resident Evil Village and how much of a departure that was from 7. And that is really just like the tip of the iceberg in terms of how much they've ranged. So super, super psyched. Get pumped for that. Justin will be back, and we will have a brawl.
To further clarify, the main ones is still a little confusing. That's 10 games, even though we are at Resident Evil 8, because the main series also includes Resident Evil 0 and Resident Evil and Code Veronica.
Code Veronica, yes. Yeah.
We'll figure it out. Should be. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, we won't be discussing 5 and 6, because those games are our dog shit.
No, we're going to be discussing 5 and 6.
We have to talk about Volcano. Oh,
those will be quick rounds.
That's fine.
Because those are pretty bad games. Wait, which one has the Wesker boss fight in a volcano?
That would be 5. 5, yeah. 5.
All right, 5. 5. 5 can hang. 5. Well, no, just the last boss fight of 5. Yeah. There was some bad stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the show. You can listen to us, as always, for free on any of your podcast services of choice. Though we do ask that you go to that Apple podcast and leave a review. You know, nice 5 stars. Goes a long way for us. Takes us to the top, baby. You can also find out more about our show at The Besties Pod on Twitter. And that is where we post prompts for any questions or thoughts you'd like to share in each episode. And that is it. We actually have to run. Frushik's construction has truly gotten out of hand. There is now a giraffe wearing a New York Yankees construction hat, just grinning as he jackhammers outside the window in the back.
Hey, also, McElroy merch, we have a bestie shirt you can get. And just show everyone your love. For this program, where we talk about ancient 3DS games for an hour and a half.
We might also have more stuff coming in the near future. So stay tuned in terms of merch.
Twist!
That's it. Thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been The Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's besties?
Besties!